Today, we're going to talk about American corporate communication, specifically in tech. And to do this, I've invited a very special guest who's going to join us and talk about corporate communication, as well as the experience of being a Brazilian living and working in tech in the U.S. Juliano has worked for companies like Dell, Arista, and currently AWS. He has some amazing insights that he shares with us about what it's like for him as a Brazilian and what it's like to have to adapt your communication style in order to thrive in business and connect with people in your personal life. Thank you so much for joining me today, and I know you're going to enjoy this interview and get lots of great takeaways, insights, and tips. Could you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about where you're from and what you do?
Sure. And thanks for the opportunity to talk to you today. I appreciate your time. I am Juliano Fort. I'm from Brazil. I have been living in the United States for 12 years now.
Excellent. And for you, what we focused on, it was communication in technology and also career development. So can you tell me a little bit about when we first met? Where were you in your English journey? Because you already had an established career and had lived in the U.S. for a while.
Yeah, for sure. So what happened is in the United States, you need to speak the perfect English for the American people, you know, in the high-tech companies. And I used to work for high-tech companies for a long time. And my manager was complaining about, hey, so your pronunciation, you know the technology, but you need to improve your pronunciation, how to pronounce some verbs and basic stuff. So I'm getting old, you know, like to learn more. And I try different trainings, books, you know, maybe if I sell my books, maybe I can retire, you know, too many books during the years. And I started to search the internet. So how can I improve my pronunciation? You know, and I'm glad I found you in a YouTube video. You know, from one YouTube video, went to another YouTube video, and I got to you that time. So, and when I talked to you, the first time was great because your plan was not to focus on the pronunciation, was focus on the communication, how to communicate. You know, depends on the situation. Not go back to school and, you know, the table is on the book is on the table, you know, and this kind of stuff. No, it's more about communication.
And that's especially, I love that you mentioned age, because as we get older, it can feel, I find that there's two reactions. There's either the person who's like, okay, I can be a student again. I know what that feels like. Or the person who's like, I don't want to be a student again. Like I already have, because you, like you said, you already had your career. You were already doing what you were doing. So to realize there was still something there. And in fact, I wanted to ask you, how did it feel to get that feedback that your manager still wanted you to work on pronunciation?
So first time I was unhappy, to be honest,
mm-hmm.
Because nobody was complaining. You know, I was a top performer, you know, employee. And he's trying to be picky on that, or I need to improve. You know, yes, I knew that I had to improve, because one thing that we think that we need to have the English American accent, mm-hmm. and it's not easy. So if you think about the United States, you have a North, South, West, East, Central, you know, accents. You have different accents, you know, and somebody telling you, hey, you need to improve your pronunciation, say, okay, but what's the impact, you know? And when he asked, he told me the day after that I started looking for videos, you know, programs, teachers, that I found you. And in the meeting that I had with him, you know, after 1 week, I told him, hey, I established already a training. And he was surprised. Oh, that was so quick. Yes, you made a complaint. You're gonna fix, you know. So
it didn't, like, wasn't that the point?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
because a big part of it, especially for people who are established and who are doing so well, like you said, like you've worked and are working for really amazing companies. the way that can sometimes cut into the ego, where when you get that feedback and it's so, did you ever feel like, oh, I wish I could speak like a native speaker like my colleagues? Or was that never part of your mentality until that feedback? I'm just curious.
It has been always my mentality to speak as a native English American person since the beginning. I moved to the United States in 2011. And I can tell you, my first month in the United States, that was horrible, I would say, you know, because I was expert in the technology. And one sales guy asked me to join a call, say, hey, Julian, you are the expert. I need you on this call to close the deal. And when that happens, you need just that expert on the call to close the deal. There's something else. You know, so that time I had been in the industry about 15 years, you know, I knew how to play the game. Okay, I joined the call and the customer started asking me questions about, hey, does the product support that? Product support this, blah, blah, blah. And we didn't. And the product didn't support. And I told the customer, I'm so sorry, but the product that you're looking for, we don't have. So our competitor has, but our product is for different, you know, use case. And finished the call, and my manager called me, hey, how did it go? I told him, say, bad. It didn't go well. Well, he said, why? I said, because what the customer is looking for, we don't have. And I told the customer. Well, guess what? In a few days, a chain of emails coming down. Hey, we lost the deal because the expert on the call didn't speak English and didn't know the technology and blah, blah, blah.
So they threw you under the bus, but with lies.
Exactly. And my boss, my manager called me, started laughing. I was nervous. You know, that when I got that email, I like to move back to Brazil. Said, I'm leaving this country right now. You know, I'm not safe.
It feels horrible.
Yeah. And my manager called me laughing, you know, and said, hey, so they can't tell about your English because you're not an American person. Okay. But I trust you and you know the technology. You know, I know that you are very honest on those calls, you know, and that's what happens. And don't worry about that. I'm going to take care about that. And that sales guy.
Drama.
That guy, sales guy left after 2-3 months, you know, so.
Oh, and I know that that's not the only example of corporate drama you've experienced.
I have.
But I don't know. Yeah. Just once every week. Okay. Oh, man. And to still persist. And I think that's something that I've always really admired about the experience of non-native speakers in these like high pressure environments, because people do sometimes use that as a scapegoat or to try to get above you in a promotion of like, no, like their English isn't whatever. But for you, and I'm so glad you said the phrase play the game, because that was a big part of what you and I worked on together, was playing the game, because you are very honest. But the art of being diplomatically honest and playing the game, but in a way that is authentic to your personality, so you don't feel like you're, you know, like the not the ideal way to play the game. So what was your biggest takeaway, or how would you say you've evolved in keeping your honesty, but doing it in a way that doesn't hurt your career, that doesn't hurt your sales and communication with colleagues?
Great question. I start to listen, to watch, and reading books about sales and about communication, you know, to understand the methodology behind scenes. Because
it's different, right? It's not just English. It's an art.
It's an art. Exactly. It's an art. Because I can't tell you, you go to a meeting and some people, they say two words. This, oh, that's amazing. You tell 20 words, it's okay. You know, so you need to know what you need to say. You know, that's, you learn. You don't learn at the school, at university, you know?
Strategic participation.
Yeah, exactly. But that was my takeaway, to to understand how to make business in America. Because, for example, I have been in China several times. I think I traveled to China 12 times making business. What? It's very different than in China and here. So in China, you make the friendship first, mm-hmm. and you sign the paper after. Here, you make the business first and the friendship later. It's opposite.
The cultural differences in business are fascinating.
Yeah, exactly. It's more money oriented,
Mm-hmm. Speaking of cultural communication, how do you find Americans, and thank you for sharing the differences that you experienced doing that in China. How would you say the communication, whether it's corporate or in general, is different from Brazilian communication and American communication? What are some things you had to adapt?
Well, now you hit a nerve, you know?
Because it's very different.
Yes. I would say not only in Brazil, Latin America. So Latin America, we like to promote the bad news. You know, when you watch the news, it's bad news everywhere. You know, is Brazil so dangerous as the TV shows? You know, the other countries in Latin America is so dangerous as well? Mm. I don't think so. You know, yes, it is, but not in that
U.S. is dangerous, like.
Yeah, exactly. If you go to some place in the United States, you know, I was in a meeting with a customer that said, hey, do you know that building is the most dangerous place in the United States? FBI is there almost every week.
You're like, you know, why are we having our meeting here?
Yeah, in the Northeast. It's, whoa, you know, but you don't see that. You don't, mm-hmm. that's a different communication in Brazil and here. Because here, your family is falling apart, and you ask, hey, how are you doing? Oh, it's great. Everything's fine. Everything's perfect. Life is good.
Everyone's smiling.
Finally. Yeah. And in Brazil, hey, how are you doing? Oh, I got divorced and blah, blah, blah. And you start, you know, you start telling what's not going well with you. Here, you covered.
Yeah.
You know,
was this hard to get you? Because I feel like with other, because I've worked with so many Brazilians, and sometimes that can be a very hard transition because you feel like you have to be almost dishonest. But it's really just the cultural norm of like the social small talk. How are you? Great. And sometimes that can be some friction and like, but we're not great.
Yeah.
Was that?
Absolutely.
Difficult? Or like, how long did it take you to embrace that? Or do you still kind of feel that like, I'll say great, but I'm not great.
Well, thanks to you to help me on that during our program. Because now I play the game. You know, so okay, I need to immerse myself in the culture here. So if I need to immerse myself, I need to do the way they do. When I'm between my Brazilian friends, okay, I'm Brazilian, so I'm gonna tell whatever what. When I'm with them, okay, I'm gonna be the American Julian here, you know, and embrace that more. I don't feel more that I'm lying.
Good. Good, because that was my next question. Because sometimes it's not about lying. It's about learning how to earn trust in a conversation to be yourself in the way that's perceived genuinely.
Exactly, because it's not lie. I think it's not sharing. It's a big difference. Because I have close American friends. And I ask them, hey, how was the trip? Oh, it was great. It was fantastic. Amazing. Best trip ever. And a few weeks later, we are having dinner. And we start talking, going more deep, you know. And the one made some comments. Say, hey, you know that trip that happened? I said, what happened? Well, we started arguing, blah, blah, blah. So inside my mind is he told me it was great. You know, was amazing, it was the best. But it wasn't that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand why they're going to share with me the first time, say, hey, it was terrible, blah, blah, blah. So they don't want to share. Well, I think it's not lying. It's more.
It's not. You're right. It's not only that it's not lying. It's that the perception, like when you're talking to a fellow Brazilian, that kind of openness is natural and normal. Whereas with the American culture, if you start off with those things, you're perceived as a pessimist or as a complainer. And so it's like strategic cultural honesty. You want to first like the superficial answer. And then as you have more trust with the person, you open up and you're able to share those stories. Sometimes it takes time, sometimes not. But yeah, that's interesting. And how do you feel that that applies business-wise? Do you feel like now that you've adapted that kind of communication style, but you do it in a way that's like genuine to you, you've been able to make better connections? Because I mean, now you go to like much bigger meetings, you're networking, you're playing golf, you're doing all these other things. Do you feel you connect better?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you need to see or use that always they are judging you. You know, that's
pressure.
Yeah. So no, it's not that pressure about that I mean, but don't open too much, you know, I don't want to say play the game several times, but you need to show another person as a business. You need to be a person with your friends, another person with your family. You know, you're not lying, but the way that you need to adapt the communication.
And I find that when sometimes there's a bit of a defensiveness when people think, no, I want to be myself only like all the time. I'm like, yes, but think about being yourself. I think the easiest way to break through is you are yourself, but the way you talk to your spouse is different than you talk to your three-year-old child.
Right.
You are yourself, but you adapt to the audience, you adapt to the situation. Like you said, when you were in China, you're not going to go in and do business as you would with an American, because that's not conducive to the results that you want.
Right. So I bought a new couch, you know, a few months ago, and came with a scratch. Okay. And a guy came, a 60 years old guy came to my home. Nice guy. You know, he was in the army before, bodyguard, you know, and all fixing. So like, hey, it's a hobby. He likes to do that. Mm-hmm. And he told me, Julian, I came to your home. I go to your customer's house. So my goal is to make the customer happy. It's not to fix the couch. Because I know you're going to be angry. I know you're feeling, you know?
Okay.
So it's a different perspective. I go to your home to make you happy because I know that the time that I meet you for the first time, you're going to be angry, you know? So about, hey, about this new sofa, couch, bed, whatever, and I didn't like, it didn't work, you're going to be so stressful. And my goal is to make you happy, you know? So and that was very, you know, good to me. So, okay, yes, I need to start to apply that, you know?
And in a technical background, I find that that's challenging because especially with engineers and in that environment, everyone's so technical.
Right.
That as you're moving up in leadership and you're leading teams, the empathy, the emotional awareness, the emotional intelligence required to navigate those escalations, it's different and it requires a different kind of communication, not different English words. Like that's where I'm like, you don't need more English, you need strategy.
Right.
And like connection and clarity. And how do you get people to trust you so that they can tell you what's wrong with the implementation of like the strategy so you can solve it.
Yeah, exactly. I keep saying that business, we do not prepare ourselves for the business. We are always playing the Super Bowl. You know, we don't have time to prepare. We don't prepare. You know, so for example, for NFL teams, they press for a week to play on Sunday, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They're pressing to do the same on Sunday. When you have a meeting, how many times do you prepare before the meeting? It's almost zero.
Okay, that's actually a very interesting perspective because that's also a struggle of like where other people don't prepare. I think as a non-native speaker, there is an extra level of preparation that you have to make time for, even if it's something as simple as like, how do you open the meeting or transition? If like, how do you get people to get back on the subject? Do you have any tips on how to flex that muscle or to prepare in a way that fits in with all the technical stuff that you're learning at the same time?
Absolutely. So when I have a meeting, if it's a strategic meeting, you know, it's a daily meeting that we talk to the people all the time. It's very different. But when I talk to the customer, I try to understand, okay, who's going to be in the meeting? I go to LinkedIn profile, say, hey, what that person likes, you know, or Facebook or Instagram, try to get more information, you know. And for example, if I have a meeting on Monday morning and has golf or NFL or whatever that's very important on Sunday games, I try to get more information about that because I know they're going to bring up something about that. Hey, did you see the game yesterday? You know, oh no. So you finish the conversation. You end the conversation. So
okay.
That's
what you're saying there, and I'm so sorry for interrupting, but I'm so excited because what you're preparing for is the small talk. And I think a lot of people think they have to prepare for the technical stuff, but the small talk is what sets the entire tone, the trust, the relaxation in yourself and the confidence. Mm-hmm. So that's amazing. So like a little light stalking.
Yeah.
Appropriate.
To break the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know they're gonna throw curveballs in you.
Yeah.
You know you're gonna be tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So technically you know, okay. Also you need to be prepared. Don't go there. You don't know what you're gonna talk.
Of course, but this is a supplemental tip, something they wouldn't expect.
Yeah, exactly. But if you make connection in the beginning, it's much, much relaxed and easier to communicate. Even if you make mistakes in the English grammar, because I have heard high-level people making mistakes, you know, in English. Everybody does. I do in Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my wife, she teases me all the time. Say, hey, you don't speak well in Portuguese. I try to speak English, you know, so...
You're like, great, now I have another language to work on.
Yeah. Well, let's talk in Spanish, you know, whatever. But you break the ice, you know, you.
And not just with the client or the other person, but with yourself.
Yes.
Because I think, or at least for me, even as a native speaker, once you have those moments of connection and levity, I feel like I let go a little bit. And from a non-native speaker perspective, I think the pressure for perfect English goes away a little bit. You're like, okay, this person gets me and I can take my time expressing myself.
Yeah.
The patience goes up.
Exactly. Because when you go to the meeting, not being a native speaker, you know, English speaker, the first thing that comes to your mind is can they understand me? They're going to understand me. You know, they're going to judge me by my accent. They're going to judge me by my grammar errors and so on. So you prejudge you that when you go to the meeting, go very close, you know, like I'm nervous, you know, that's not the case.
You're going in with toxic assumptions.
Yeah. Yeah.
That kill your confidence before you open your mouth.
Exactly. Exactly.
So is there anything that you do, or was it just feeling more comfortable by doing that you were able to, or maybe you still do? I don't know. Do you still feel that way sometimes before a meeting, or do you catch yourself, and how would you get yourself out of that?
Well, I feel that way when somebody makes a comment, you know, somebody makes a comment, I feel that way, you know, comes back to me, again, you know, this kind of stuff, and a little depressed, you know, say, hey, I have been invested a lot, and what's, you know, I know it's working, but you want to be perfect.
Mm-hmm. But how do you, when we started, that was a big thing, but I feel like I'm really proud to see that you've let that perfectionism go a lot. And the way I see you being able to interact, because you don't, like you mentioned depression, and I think that's really, you hit the nail on the head. There's like a sinking when you have those moments of like, wait, I mispronounced that, or they're correcting me, or they don't understand me. But I feel like you don't go as, you don't fall as deep anymore. You just keep going. Do you feel that? I see that in you, but have you felt that effect on your communication?
Well, is at the moment, if somebody makes, again, if I have a comment, but inside my mind is my life is bigger than that. You know, I don't care. Like, whatever. Yeah, whatever, you know, move on. You know, so because everybody makes a mistake again, you know, and if I feel the person is not understanding me, you know, it's very hard. That happens more when the person never travel abroad, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah. there's no communication with other cultures, you know, kind of stuff. That's what I have seen, you know, in the past, living here for 12, 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
That, so is a point. But I try to change the communication. I try to speak less, more to the point, you know, instead to make long phrases, say, okay, yes or no, and short answers.
Which, as a Brazilian, that's hard because the Latin American communication style is like long journey, scenic journey, and then the point. Whereas with American English, it's not just the sentence structure. It's like get to the point, bottom line first, and then maybe you get a chance to explain it, but maybe not. And that can be so frustrating to feel like, wait, I have so much more I could say.
You hit another good point. There are some meetings. I go to the meeting, and at the end of the meeting, it has some actions. They are discussing some actions. We're going to talk about some actions. And I ask later who was with me, say, what action? They didn't talk much. You know, they talked two words and a lot of actions. You know, so what's the point? Mm-hmm. And because they don't need to explain too much. You know, it doesn't need to be
bottom
a long
line.
Phrase. Yeah. Okay. So they're going to say, we need to have this appointment next week. Don't. You know, you take, okay, where's the action? Who's going to make the PowerPoint? Who's going to present? And so on. You know, doesn't need to discuss at that moment what needs to be done. No instructions.
I feel like, and tell me if you agree, I feel like Americans in corporate English, we communicate like we're talking in bullet points.
Yes.
And versus like the novel approach of Brazil or all Latin America, I find.
Yeah.
We're just like little robots. We're like, no, point, 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 action, action, action. Okay, goodbye.
Right. Yeah. That's another good strategy. You know, it's a bullet, only bullets.
So if you think about it that way, because I feel like visually you see bullet points regardless of your cultural background, mm-hmm. that can help. Like, okay, what would I say if this is a bullet point? Or if you have an idea, how would I do three bullet points about this? And that can help you participate in a way that translates better. But most importantly, even if your idea isn't taken, as you and I have experienced and experimented with, it's the participating in the meeting that leads to promotions, that leads to being asked on teams. So a lot of times people will stay quiet and like, well, I had nothing to contribute. I'm like, contribute something.
Right.
You have to voice, you have to show up. If you want the promotions.
Right. Well, I would say you need to show up in time to make visible for people. You know, not only for promotional, but they're going to recognize you the next time. You know, because one thing, because I can tell you, I can talk to 1,000 people. If I see the person again, I know who he is. Mm-hmm. Maybe I don't remember the name, but I know I talked to him. One thing that I don't like, well, here, not that the life is different. You talk to the people 10 times, and the next time, like, who are you? You know?
I hate that. I'm sure I've done it, but, like, I know what you mean where you're like, who am I? We've, like, had coffee together or so whatever, like.
Yeah, like, in the neighborhood here, when you have something together, you met a person before, and you come to the house, you know, the neighbor's house. Hey, nice to meet you. Say, dude. I talked to you, you know, the last, you know, what, neighborhood meeting, whatever. How come you don't know, you know?
That's not an American thing so much as I find that's a certain personality. And I don't know if they have bad facial recognition or they're being snobby or like whatever the issue might be. I think that also speaks to perception. Like you mentioned before, when you go into a meeting and you already assume everyone's judging you. When it comes to those moments, I find, okay, I can assume this person's a jerk. They've obviously met me, or they're going to judge me because of my English, or make something else up. Because technically we made that up. Assume something different. Like that person did not sleep well last time we met and they don't remember anything. Or everyone's going to love me in this meeting. It's equally as false, but to pick the assumption that builds you up so that you can communicate better goes a long way. It's not lying to yourself. It's just creating the reality that lets you thrive.
Assumption bias, I think the hardest one, you know, make assumption, but it's totally different. You know,
you can use it in an empowering way.
Yeah.
Is it the assumption bias? Typically when we talk about that, it's always negative.
Right.
So I try to pivot that. And I'm like, okay, what bias can I assume or what can I have that will actually make this, whether it's a more productive conversation or honestly just more pleasant for myself?
That's a good point. That reminds me when I moved to the United States and I learned the, not in the hard way, but so you were walking into inside the office and one person passed by you, say, hey, how's it going? You try to answer. The person is a mile away already.
Like they don't care about me.
Yeah, exactly. In Brazil, say, hey, how's it going? You stop, talk. Hey, want a coffee? You know, that's not coffee. You don't know. Like, or you say in Brazil, hey, hi, in pass, we don't ask a question. Here, they ask a question. Hey, how are you doing? And when you try to, hey, I'm doing well. I went to, you know, to the lake. No, they are far away from you already. You know, it's like a hi. You know?
Yes. So that's where when you realize, oh, it's not something to be taken personally. It's just a weird way we say hi.
Yeah.
Like you can breathe. Okay.
But you don't see that on books, you know?
Oh. No, prepared for that when they come here. And I feel like it's such a culture shock and it feels so bad.
Yeah, like one thing that I love here is to, when you go to the drive-thru, somebody pays for you or you pay for somebody else. You know, hey, you're going to say, yeah, that's for me, is amazing. But I was living, I say, for 6 months. I dropped my wife to the airport. I came back. I saw by in the grocery store to buy a box of cereal that time. And one lady, I remember like today at Target. So she was in a grocery store, the cart, you know, on the cashier. Yeah. You know, was behind her. And she said, can I pay for it? I said, no. Can I pay for you, please? I said, no. Sir, can I pay for you? I almost opened my wallet and said, hey, I have money to pay the box of cereal. You know, I'm not asking you.
But you're like, is it my outfit? Like, why are they?
Yeah. Well, I was asking my winter coat and, you know, boots. I said, oh, well, do I like you?
What vibe am I giving off?
Yeah. And I said, no. She said, okay, whatever. And because she started laughing. And I pay after. I stay for 10 minutes, you know, to get through. And I asked somebody, I don't remember who, that time, and said, hey, that situation happened to me. Oh, it's normal. Your time is valuable. She wants to pay for you because like $2, $3, you go home. You go where you need to go, you know? So instead of waiting for her to pay all her, you know, grocery, and that's what the case. So, okay, now. Like I was in the grocery store, a lady, old lady, like to buy some cigarettes, you know, and she didn't have enough money. You know, I told the cashier, yeah, don't worry. So put on my account, you know, like I pay everything, you know, doesn't matter. So you contribute, you know, I love America, you know, that help each other, you know. So when you have a disaster or something else, you know, we like to help.
Especially in tight-knit communities.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I like that. So we had the pros and the cons of the American cultural.
Pros and cons. Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, I love that. To wrap up and to bring it back to corporate communication, what would you recommend for other engineers who are trying to climb the corporate ladder and are really good at the technical part, but now they need to learn the leadership communication part? Do you have any tips on whether it's strategies or mindsets that they can work on?
Yeah, so I don't want to be biased because I'm talking to you, you know. So I was, hey, so go talk to Tanya because you know that I have talked to several people, tried to reach you, you know, talk to you and buy the program. I think your program is amazing for who needs to improve the communication. It's not only for the accent. I know you have a big focus on accent, in terms of not accent, but not non-American people.
Mm-hmm.
But I recommend even to American people, you know, native English, because it focuses more the communication, you know, business communication, I would say. So I recommend to reach out to you, you know, your website and try to, you know, talk to you because it's going to be more than English, you know, business communication. Yeah, because I, I have, like I said in the beginning, I have several books here, you know, I read, but it's hard, you know, to pick, you know.
And it's doing it.
Yes.
Because you have so much knowledge from all the books, but until you open your mouth and you have to like figure out how would you express that in that particular meeting, it's different.
Yeah, and I think you tailor made your training program because, first of all, we can't stay here for hours talking about, but when I have a meeting, important meeting, you know, interview, you know that, and presentation, I come to you, say, Tanya, I have this presentation, you know, help me to, how, what's the key words? So to present that, you know, that will help me a lot on that for a specific use case. Otherwise,
it makes it so much more efficient.
Yeah, if you try to boil the ocean, you don't go anywhere. You know, I think you need to be more focused.
Nice expression.
Press it, you know, and pick the right training, you know, the right person to help you to make that happen. Otherwise, you spend your money and don't go anywhere.
Yes. To take what you said, I would say for the pronunciation part, for other engineers who are getting into leadership, clarify the high-frequency words. Like the words that are really important for your technology and for your company, make sure you're saying those really well. But like you said, like don't go and try to relearn English. Really focus on communication strategy and using that in a way that makes you feel good. Because it's I know we say playing the game, but sometimes that connotation can be a little negative. But it's how do you play the game where you feel good, where you still feel like, because I feel like you still feel you're very honest, you're very direct, but now you do it in a way where people listen differently, people take it differently, and you're able to really move the needle on the projects that you're working on.
Yeah, no, that's great. The company that I work for, we had the leadership principles. Mm-hmm. Every meeting, the leaders, they're talking about, not about, hey, do you know that leadership principle? No, they are saying key words mm-hmm. from that leadership principle. You know,
say, if you're at AWS or Amazon, anybody listening, memorize those, say them every day, live, breathe, sleep leadership principles.
Yeah, that's our Bible.
And it's not just lip service, because I've studied them as well, because I work with a lot of people from Amazon. It's the spirit of it, you know, like yeah. Really, like take advantage of the fact that they're making you memorize these and really internalize how that can make you a better communicator.
And it makes sense. It's not making up, you know.
Yeah, so they're very practical.
I need to learn that. But when I leave the company, I'm not using more. No, you can use those leadership anywhere. You can use their personal, you know, mm-hmm. if you're family. You know, in your business, is very, very good. I think it has been well, well done.
Well done. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Make sure to check out the notes for this episode to connect with Giuliano on LinkedIn and learn more about leadership and generative AI and other wonderful tech news. Thank you.
Thank you, Tanya. Appreciate it.
If you're interested in resources like online courses or one-on-one coaching to help you build your business communication, make sure to go to tanyasuarez.com.